Welcome to Ravencast, episode number 13. I'm Sandy.
And I'm Dave.
And we are going to continue our interviews with national organizations with this interview of Heimgast from the Odinic Rite.
And we're just going to jump straight into this because this was a humongoid interview totaling in over 50 minutes, and we could have gone on for much, much longer, but we need to get on there for all those folks who have dial-up.
That's right. So sit back, relax, make yourselves comfortable, and enjoy. We now present Heimgast of the Odinic Rite.
Hi, Heimgast. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Well, it's a great pleasure.
Yeah, thank you so much.
We have you, as I'm sure everyone by now has recognized, as part of our series on national organizations, and you are representing the Odinic Rite. Is there anything in particular that you'd like to say to start about the Odinic Rite that you feel in particular is important?
Probably not so much about the Odinic Rite, but actually to start, I would like to thank both of you very much for this initiative, because I do think this is a very useful resource, not only for those already practicing our ancestral faith of Odinism or Azatru, or whatever term is used, but it's also very useful for those who are, you know, outside our faith but are still interested to find out what it's about. And with so many different strands of the greater tapestry of our faith now apparent, it can be very confusing to those who are not directly in the know. So I'm pretty sure this initiative will clear up quite a considerable amount of that confusion. So in that, I think I really can speak, I mean, the rest of this I'm going to be speaking almost entirely for the Odinic Rite, but I think on this issue I can speak on behalf of the whole community when I thank you for this. And I'd like to say that as what has now become the longest established continually active Odinist group present in North America today, on behalf of the Odinic Rite, I'd like to say we're very pleased to be able to help this initiative, very pleased to give it support, and we thank you very much.
Oh. Not at all, our pleasure.
Absolutely, absolutely. Wow, what a way to start an interview.
Now, the framework that we were coming from on this was that the focus was on the relevance of national organizations to the individual Astur. What do you see in that framework as the role of a national Astur organization?
Well, actually, before I get to that point, could I just point out we generally use the term Odinism, and it's something I think I'd like to clear up, because there is a confusion around that, around the term, why it's used and what it means. So before I move on, would it be all right if I could just...
Please do.
Right. I've heard a lot of, you know, people say a lot of reasons why we say it, but this is from the horse's mouth, as it were, and there are two major reasons for this. Now, the first reason that we use the terms Odinist and Odinism usually is really a reflection of just how long our pedigree is and how long we've been established, because it needs to be remembered that the very early pioneers in the reawakening of our indigenous organic religion, and I'm talking here of very early, back in the, you know, Victorian era, tended to use the term Odinism. Now, their revolution in thought and their reawakening to the ancestral faith was largely confined to secrecy or romanticism, because, you know, the general mores of the time were not at all friendly towards a resurgence of a pagan religion, as it would have been seen. But of course, they did at least ignite that torch, and then they carried that forward, where it was picked up really in the 20s and 30s in Europe in particular, and also, strangely enough, one could say in Australia. But there were a number of groups which were practicing or promoting our faith, and funnily enough, probably the best known one from that period is from Australia, and that was Rudd Mill's group, the Anglican Church of Woden. And most of these early pioneers, and certainly the ones in the English-speaking world, continue to describe their faith as Odinism and themselves as Odinists. Now, of course, this whole thing got derailed by the Second World War, which was a great tragedy for Europe and European peoples and the world in general. So that severely damaged the resurgence of the faith, but it didn't extinguish it. And then, despite the problems, once the war was out of the way in the late 40s and into the 50s, the torch was picked up again. And still these early pioneers, you know, in, as a direct continuation, were using this term Odinist. Now, it was a very interesting time, particularly in Northern Europe, because there were myriads of small societies and groups which were formed and dissolved. It was almost like in the Ginnunga Gap, in a way. There was this constant forming, dissolving, reforming. And once again, very often that same term, Odinism, was used. And so this continued through the 60s, when, of course, Elsa Christensen and her husband formed Odinist groups in North America. And this had all been before the term Master True had been really heard or created, I suppose. Or if it had been used, it hadn't sort of spread from Iceland at that point. So those who actually formed the Odinic Rite, the guys around who actually formed it in the 70s, they weren't really new to the faith at all or inexperienced. They'd been practicing, in some cases, Odinism since the 1930s. And so the last four decades, as it was then, they'd known their religion as Odinism. So they're obviously not going to suddenly ditch it. You're not going to suddenly change the name you give. So when the Odinic Rite was set up, it wasn't so much a brand new entity, although, of course, the name was, but it was more like the final blueprint, which had been years in the making. And now was really the right time, or it was considered the right time, to unveil this vehicle by which our religion, Odinism, can be restored. There was no reason for them to adopt a new name. And so that's really the first and major reason. And secondly, we now continue to use that partly as to maintain our direct link with those early pioneers and those who formed the Odinic Rite, known or unknown. But because we revere their memory and their deeds, we also honour them by using the elder term of that faith. And each time we use that term, it is, among other things, you know, a tribute to the early work that was done. Now, I suppose a secondary question that comes from all that is, do we consider Odinism to be the same thing as a true? And in that, I'd say essentially, yes, they are the same. I mean, there may be subtle differences, but that's more to do with different groups. You would get two groups probably who say they're Diodish, who will practice in a different way. So essentially, yes, we're talking of the same faith. And we do use the term at times when it's expedient to do so. But anyway, I thought that was probably an important point to clear up first.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And the idea of it being used as a way to commemorate the people that were so significant in starting everything is absolutely fabulous, actually. I mean, a great way to keep that.
We do think it's important to sort of demonstrate, not, you know, I suppose to the larger community in which we live, that, you know, our faith, it isn't some sort of New Age thing or cult which has just sprung up, but, you know, this is as old as our people, whatever, under whatever name. So that's one way. And then we hope it's successful.
So
I better move on to the idea of having national groups.
Yes.
I mean, I think there's a variety of reasons. And, of course, a lot will depend on the purpose and the aims of the groups and in their structure as to why they would, you know, form into a national group. And also, of course, you know, really, I suppose the Odinic Rite is an international group, but for administrative purposes, you know, we operate on regional and national levels. I mean, it's a point. To us, our first nation is the Odinic Nation, and that's not confined by geographical borders. But, you know, obviously working in the material realm, which we have to, we do, for admin purposes and organisation, perform regional and national levels. And I suppose the reasons we do are going to be very much, there's going to be a lot of common ground between all the different groups in that, because it does definitely provide a sense of community for people, particularly in continents the size of, you know, North America. They can, if there isn't a group to which they can claim allegiance and join, they could be, you know, left almost in solitude. So a national movement accomplishes that aim of creating a community for people. It also is the best way of accomplishing many of the aims that we have. And, you know, our aim really is the full restoration of Odinism. So our role as a national movement is to continue with this awakening, an awakening of our folk, through reuniting the individual with our gods, their ancestral path, and their community in Midgard, and turning this into a cohesive, holistic unit which will help us to return to our more natural ways and laws, and hopefully bring, you know, a new golden age, as we could look at it in that way. And of course, all our work is made relevant to the modern world. And all these goals are best accomplished by building a solid framework, which is a national movement. And also with the individuals, it allows individual members to be effective in their actions. It provides a community of brothers and sisters who can support each individual member. And it facilitates initiatives which can't be accomplished in solitude. It is vital, of course, when dealing with the establishment, in matters such as advocating for the rights of incarcerated Odinists, to do so as a defined and identifiable national organization. If you turn up to talk to them, you know, as a collection of well-meaning individuals, they'll take very little notice. So it's better when you're presented as a national organization or international, then they will take you more seriously. And it also pools the resources of each individual member and amplifies these, and further provides a very clear definition and identity for members of a national group. So within that, it will help the individual grow and reach their full potential. It provides resources to learn more about our religion, and of course it champions the rights of our co-religionists in society at large, as well as providing education for both our own members and, again, those in the society at large. So those are the main things. And we also like to think, due to really our long establishment, one of our roles, kind of responsibility, if you like, is we like to act as a kind of clearing of paths for others, and hope others who share our beliefs and our religion can, you know, benefit by experience we have and paths we've cut. So, you know, that's probably it's very definitely another one of the things we see as part of our role as a national organization.
So what does the OR do specifically in terms of, how does their structure facilitate that?
What we do to fulfill this sort of role, we're working within many areas of activity. And this will be through the individual activists, our hammer and hearth units, our various sections, departments, etc. I'll probably detail them a little more later. Actually, I will detail them a little more. And then naturally we have our cycle of rituals, which connects again the individual with the whole, as it were, whether it's the hearth or an individual practitioner. Then we organize regional, national, and international events, moots, etc., where our people can meet and learn, plan, work, worship, you know, share comradeship, socialize together. And these actually nourish, you know, the individual members and in intangible ways, I guess. But it also means that they are more ready and able to help the movement advance. Other things we have towards this, we do have a correspondence course in Odinic philosophy and theology. We have a Gothi Githia training program. And, of course, our Hammer members have a spiritual and physical regime which they must follow. And this includes daily, weekly, monthly practices, etc. And we do have a facility for more specialized magical training, though obviously elements of all these things are interwoven. And we have a number of publications, of course, but such things as member publications and forums, I think are pretty much, you should have them. If you haven't got something like that, you're probably not even a local organization, let alone a national one. But that's the sort of areas we work through. Now, if you're talking about structure, I suppose our structure, I mean, we would say our core is the indivisible and integral kernel of faith folk family. Being a living, evolving body, each individual member well, can be seen as a cell of the greater body. In fact, that is literal. They literally are the individual living cells of the body of the Rite. The Hunners and Hearths, the Court of Gothar, and the various departments could be compared to the organs and limbs of the body. And actually, a very good analogy of our structure is of a tree. Our lands and heritage is the soil in which our ancestral soul resides as a seed. And the Odinic Rite is an outgrowth from that seed, which is rooted, you know, in our lands and in our ancestral soul. And comparing to a tree, the Odinic Rite itself, that thing which defines us, that body of law, our practices, you know, the sort of transcendental things, which give us our unique identity and potential, that can be compared to the trunk of the tree. And that, from that, the supporting structures are created. So you'd have the boughs and the branches, which would be our various sections, our various departments, and the hearts of the Rite. Our Hummer units can probably be seen as the individual twigs. And all, of course, are integral to the support structure of the tree per se, through their organized and cohesive practices. And, of course, the leaves are the members, the individuals, and they're, all these components are essential to the entirety of the tree. They're all sustained by the same life-giving sap that arises from our ancestral roots, and all are nourished by the holy light and the sacred dew of our gods and goddesses.
Would you mind speaking a little bit more, for those who may not know or be as familiar, with some of those terms that you used as far as hammer and hearth sections?
Right, yeah. The hammer is, well, I'll start with a hearth, because a hearth, you could say, is equivalent to a kindred. I think kindred's probably widely used and widely known. So it's a group of our members who come together regularly, usually live very local to each other, and so they form a very definite unit, local unit of the Odinic Rite. A difference may be that in some organizations the kindreds are more or less autonomous, or are autonomous, so that you would, the organization itself is composed of a kind of collection of autonomous units, and very often very diverse in thought and practice. Whereas in the Odinic Rite, the hearth is not autonomous. It abides by the same rules and regulations of which govern every member of the Rite. So that is, it's a local unit. That's the hearth. Then the hammer members could be called really a hearth of one. And they're like a cadre of members who have a specialized training regime to follow, and that will include spiritual practice as well as physical discipline. And they do have, there's more expectations of them. You know, a lot of the members can, you know, choose to take part in a block once a month or twice a month, however many times, or some probably less than that. But the Hummer members are committed and required to carry out the daily, weekly, monthly ritual. So they're like our cadre individual members. Then we have various sections, which I'll probably detail a bit later, but that'll more clearly show how we work, I think. And then the Court of Gothar can be considered the sort of guiding council. A kind of executive body, I suppose, would be one way of looking at it. Well, you have to have people acting in cohesion to create the most effective results. Has that helped?
Absolutely, absolutely. I was wanting to get out the difference between hearth and hammer.
Yeah.
I think that was really detailed very well, especially considering that in my mind, when I think hearth, I think that's a group that specifically they're related. They're all husband, wife,
it's
children.
It's a family organization.
Yeah.
A lot of our hearths will be actually formed in that way. They will be a family unit, or, you know, several families, but not all. I mean, that model, because we are very family-focused. So the model of the hearth, family hearth, well, that's what was chosen, actually. The term was chosen to sort of emphasize that connection with the family, but, you know, also the extended family. So that's our term.
Well, so are there any specific projects that the OR are working on right now?
Yeah, there's a tremendous amount that we're working on, and a tremendous amount we have planned actually quite a few of our projects we do keep under wraps until they've been tested before they, you know, before they have their public debut. So, I won't concentrate on those, but some of the ones, and this is just some of the ones that are really in action now as we speak. Well, I mean, firstly, I don't know where to start. I'll start with we're very active in the areas of ecology and the environment. Most of our work in that is coordinated under our environmental concerns department. And I suppose an overall, idea for this is it works to empower the folk to act to protect the environment and to, raise awareness of various environmental matters and also act as a genuinely effective resource for personal and family health care. Now, this conducts a number of campaigns. We always believe in very active work. We're very active and we stress activism. So in keeping with our radical and active approach, members are directly in defense of our Mother Earth by such things as cleaning up of sacred sites or areas of beauty, parks, woods. We do a lot of work with the Adopt a Highway scheme, which you'll all know about. We also work to oppose developments which are damaging to sites of beauty or religious or cultural significance. And in that, we've had some very great successes against plans for so-called development by multi-million dollar international concerns. And we've been very effective in some instances in actually stopping such sites being destroyed. We also take part in various social and agit-prop action on issues such as chemtrails and HAARP. Now, while on those issues, we can't directly stop them, we don't have an air force. We can educate and agitate against these horrendously destructive and environmentally devastating evils. So there's some of the things that department do. And we have it operates a website, that's the Guardian's website, which is accessible from our main website. It's regularly updated. And again, like much of our work, it's been of great help, not just to OR members, not just to other Odinists and Arzatrua, but to many other people also engaged in combating the Jotuns, which move against our Mother Earth and the well-being of all life. Another one of our major initiatives, and very highly successful also, is we operate a very efficient prison affairs bureau. Now, we've always had prisoner members since the formation of the Odinic Rite in 1973. And at first we worked very closely with Elsa Christensen in this, who really was a pioneer of what's often called prison outreach. And then, of course, in time with our development, we got to a point we had so many convict members and members being released who'd been incarcerated, we realised we'd be better able to minister to them if we created a section specifically handling prison matters. And while this section does do outreach, it isn't just outreach. We cover all or as many areas of Odinism in prisons as possible, and that would be meeting with the authorities, agitating or advocating, perhaps is a better way of putting it, for religious rights for our comrades. And we've been very successful in all this. We've had blots practiced now in prison systems where no Odinist service of any kind had ever been practiced before. And our Prison Affairs Bureau now is regularly contacted by prison authorities and chaplains to inquire about our religion and just generally liaise to try and make things smoother. Now, in time, of course, we will hope to move to having halfway houses, etc., for recently released Odinist prisoners to help facilitate a more positive return to free society. We had a great testament on our efficiency in this from Else Christensen, because shortly before her death, as it turned out, but shortly before her retirement, she asked us to take over her work in that area, so we were very honoured on that. And we haven't been the first group who've organised in this way, and as well as Elsa, of course, Valgard Murray of Azatrua Alliance has done a lot of work in prisons. So, but that's one of the areas which we're very, very pleased with. We've also got a military outreach, which really at this stage is just concerned with keeping in touch with servicemen and women. And in these times when so many are overseas and a long way from home, this is, this is a welcome thing. Recently, we've done a collaboration with a cultural group, which is based in Canada, That's the Northern Indo-European cultural movement. And this sort of collaboration has begun to bear fruit already. We've collaborated on the production of some sort of audio webcast type thing, which is I haven't personally. But it's Ancestral Cosmology, parts 1 and 2. So that's another area where we're collaborating with a compatible group. We've also got an initiative in operation, and this is really operated by one of our hearts, whereby any of our members or friends who have a trade in the construction field, whether it's an electrician or train driver, scaffold or whatever, can be virtually guaranteed employment if they wish to relocate to that area of operation. And the members involved in that will give guidance to other hearts or groups who are interested in setting up something similar.
Wow.
That's a very practical demonstration of building our community in action there. So that's, literally, if you're a plumber or an electrician, you can go there and you will get employment and a bit of help in finding accommodation until you settle in. Then we've got the FEARD, which is FEARD training. What that is a holistic approach to life, and it develops the mind, body, and soul to have a completely healthy lifestyle, spiritually and physically. And attached to that is ORV Team FEARD, well, that's Odinic Rite Vinland Team FEARD. And this is an officially registered competitive martial art team, and they compete in competitions across the United States. It's got its own training facility, and it's already got quite a few tournament champions. And this facility is open to children, youths, and adults of both sexes. So anyone who's able to and wishes to can receive training exercise for the whole being. And this has been another great success, and with the acquisition of its training facility, it looks to have a very promising future. Well, because naturally the Odinic Rite place great value on the family, we have excellent projects in that area under the aegis of Acorn Hollow. Well, what happened some years ago, we conducted a survey of our members to find areas they felt of importance where we could do some work. And education, of course, for children was high on the priorities. So a resource that assists families to grow in an Odinic lifestyle and educate their children has been developed. This is currently provides reliable resource for information on European traditions and Odinist folkways via the web, and it operates the Acorn Hollow Home Educators, which is set up to support and give a resource to Odinist families in educating their children. Right now, this group holds regular meetings where Odinic families can meet and enjoy each other's company in a safe and educational and fun atmosphere. Being family-friendly, we've long had a kids publication, and of course that's an area constantly developing, and it's almost certainly true that we've probably got more kids than any other group there is. We've got like a growing army of them, and we also have a kids website underway, and there are various events geared towards the children and families, and again these are pretty much constant. And aligned with that, we were in the last stages of launching our youth section. And this actually was an initiative which developed from youth themselves. So it's basically a group which will adhere to the OR outlook, it'll be safeguarded by adults. But it's very much a youth-orientated organisation thought up by them and run by them. And as ever, of course, we will be developing more literature, but I guess really that's to be expected of any group, really. So I think for now, there's quite a lot more, but I think that's probably covered quite a bit for now.
Oh, I should think so. that's a whole lot for people to be able to go back and listen to as far as different things that may be of interest to an individual specifically. That's huge.
Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the idea of not just having a prison ministry that's there for the prisoners themselves, but also the concept of really touching with the people who are in authority at different prisons so that they have an understanding and an idea of where they're coming from is a great value.
That's that's very valuable, because quite often they have no real idea what our faith is. So having no real idea, their first tendency is to be suspicious. And that sets up straight away a tension between themselves and the practitioners. So having this agency, this way of actually talking to them and explaining what our needs are, what our beliefs are, and what they're not, it releases that tension. In, you know, obviously not in all cases, because they're, you know, the establishment is often going to be hostile to something it sees as, I don't know if they call it competition, but it's, you know, it's not run of the mill. It's a radical approach, and quite naturally, establishments tend to be pretty reactionary.
And I think that your idea about coming up with a, you know, Odinic halfway house, place for wayward berserker, it is a really great idea. I mean, it's a realistic boots on the ground kind of concept of how to get somebody who's been out of society back into society.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, I will add that actually, so far, it's been seen that the recidivist rate amongst our members, who, you know, released members, has been considerably lower than the general, you know, the general average. And so that, so far, has been very successful, and it just shows that if people have made impulsive and bad choices, do find something, do find a path which they can identify with, and it actually shows their value and how they can be valuable to society, it then leads to a far more productive lifestyle upon release, and that's been reflected in the fact that we do, so far, we have vastly reduced recidivist rates amongst our members. And that, of course, is encouraging to the establishment in a way, when they can actually see this, well, we don't particularly like it, or we don't understand it, but it seems to work, so let's roll with it.
Right, and you have, because your organization has been around for as long as it has, and been so involved for as long as it has that background to sort of back up what you're saying. You have the numbers, you have the info, and you have all of this information you can give them, which I'm sure doesn't hurt.
Oh, absolutely. They always keep the playing field pretty unequal, but at least we can equalize it a bit, you know.
At least help and be there, because I'm sure part of some problem after being released is feeling like you don't have community. There isn't anybody out there that really understands what you've been through. And so if you can get in touch with people who have, that's going to be very powerful.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And actually, we've got a growing number of hearts and units where such, exactly as you've just said it, you know, they say, well, get in touch with these guys, or, because they know what it's all about and they can help guide you. So, yeah, very successful, very pleasing.
Nice. And then, of course, all the environmental work and work with children and families is just, you know,
yeah,
what more can you say? You're helping the environment and little kids, you know?
Yeah, that's right. It's been very rewarding so far, so we're pleased.
Absolutely, and absolutely, and for me, anytime kids are allowed to go and with a modicum of supervision, but really be allowed to just be kids and express themselves in a safe environment is...
And being involved in the faith, that's the future.
That's right, the children are the treasure.
Right, but they get to express that and explore that without necessarily the influence of adults. I think it's how you will find the genesis of our faith through the next generation,
yeah.
Because they're coming up, they're taking what we have and what we've done and sort of internalizing it, because they've grown up with it. More insight.
Yeah, it's going to be, it's really interesting times for that, because, you know, 10, 20 years down the road, you're going to start seeing the results of this, so it's good.
So, moving down our list of questions, how much emphasis does the OR place on tribalism?
Well, you know, that really depends on what is meant by that. I suppose if what is meant is that, you know, one focuses on their own people, I suppose that could be called a tribalist outlook, and I guess we would have that. But I think maybe you're probably perhaps referring to the concept which Steve McNallan promoted a few years ago in the AFA's Build the Tribes period. So that version, we've never had any emphasis on, to be honest. We thought, well, we don't live in a tribal society today. We're not going to recreate it. We don't really recreate the past. We learn from the past, but we've got to act in the present so we can build a noble future. So the build the tribes idea, we never really took to at all, actually. So there was no emphasis. And, you know, we kind of made that known, talked about it. I think that's another positive. That was something I thought was very positive hearing Steve talking, that the AFA's latest uncollation, they've kind of realised that it may have sounded good, but in reality it was very impractical. So they've sort of followed a path on that issue. And I think that's positive. I was much encouraged, because I think this bodes well for the entire faith movement.
So you're in favour of a more inclusive concept as far as community goes, and trying to work as a whole.
Well, what we prefer, I suppose, to we prefer to focus on what could be termed, what it was termed, folk building, which I'm taking that actually that term directly from a talk by one of our information officers, Kathy Metzger, and she gave this talk some years ago to the great moot of the Hodenic Rite. And it really means building your own communities as self-sufficient as possible, but not separate from society. Actually, a good example of this in action was, or is the scheme where, I mentioned earlier, where, you know, a tradesperson will be able to go to one of our hearths, and they'll get employment in this particular area, without doubt, and they'll be, so that's, you know, it's building kind of self-reliant communities, but still within the framework of society at large. And another document, actually, which details these things, is written by a guy called Athelstan, who's an AOR member, and it's Coexistent Cultural Communities, or CCC document, I think it's called. So I won't go over them point by point, because they are available and I wouldn't do them justice, but they're very influential in setting out just this kind of blueprint. And actually, Steve was given a copy of the CCC document, and he was highly impressed with that. So again, it's very encouraging to see the wider Odinist movement is able to look at these different initiatives, and we can help each other. We're able to give a lead on that, which is very encouraging, very exciting. Yeah, that's our way of looking at it.
One of the following question, actually, I think touches on the Odinic Rite has such a long history that I'm certain there were hurdles along the way. What things in particular, like if you had to pass on your wisdom as an organization to a fledgling organization, what things have happened that you've really learned from and gotten, you feel have become stronger and better for them?
To be honest, this is quite difficult to answer, because obviously we've faced various problems, but they haven't tended to be those of policy or direction or even structure. And that is really, I mean, that is because of the age. You know, those who created the Odinic Rite initially had already sort of had decades of this practice, so they kind of unveiled, you know, a blueprint. So what we were provided with really was a kind of framework or blueprint to work on, which had already been tried and tested, and it was really down to us, our work continues to fill that in, you know, to fill that framework in. I mean, as a very direct example of that, you know, the nine noble virtues and the nine charges, which I think are pretty well known in the entire sort of, you know, Odinist as a true heathen community. And these were first set down by the creators of the Odinic Rite. But eight of them, they'd already used, formulated and used in an earlier group, and they just added one when they formed the rite. So it's very hard in that way to, obviously, I mean, the problems we face are the same as everyone else faces, is in funding and time and resources are a constant struggle, because we're a volunteer organisation, and you have to work for your family, and you have to pay the bills, and at the same time you're building a movement. So, but as advice, I mean, it's hard to say, because we haven't had any of these great sort of changes of direction, or we always held we can't look back and say, well, you know, on reflection, we shouldn't have, perhaps we shouldn't have worn period clothing because, you know, we never did. And we never limited our view of Odinism to one particular period. So we didn't focus on one patchwork or one patch on a sort of vast quilt of our folk religion, really.
But you really see that as because of the fact that you started out with such a clearly defined blueprint to begin with?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what it was. I think our blueprint was, and it was very visionary. I mean, a lot of the things included remained just as, you know, just as something on the plans until the right time was reached where we could put them into action. So what we've done, I mean, we've, without any doubt at all, we've deepened a lot and we've developed, but we haven't really changed anything. You know, it's hard to sort of answer that in any other way.
I think that actually makes a lot of sense, because it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, what you're saying is that because what you started out with was a concept that had been honed over very many years by a group of people who are already familiar with the ins and outs of how a group would work on a smaller scale, they were able to really expand that so that it would work well as a larger organization to begin with, without any of the growing pains that you might see.
We do hope that by our examples, other people can benefit as well, you know. But and it is because of that. I mean, I suppose if there was one bit of advice that you could just give out, it would be very clear in your definite in what you want to do. And once you've got that clarity of vision, then just stick to it. Don't change it for short-term popularity. Don't try and please people here, there, and everywhere, because you won't. You know, stay with it. And don't think, well, we'll try this now. That hasn't worked. We're going to try that. Sort out what you want to do. Sort out the way you're going to do it. You're not going to do it all at once, and accept that and just move towards it. And whatever the outside pressures, don't buckle. And if you find malcontent elements in your own movement, well then, remove them. And, you know, I mean, we're an organic.
Direct action, always the best way to go.
Yeah, I mean, you know, every now and again, you know, an organic body has to have purges periodically, and you know, so if you find people within who are malingerous, well then, remove them. But don't. I mean, that's it. You have to be clear and just, you know, clear and dedicated, and just continue.
What do you see the roles of leaders in Ositro, or in, for the OR, I should say?
Yeah, I mean, I'm probably going to repeat things. Already said, you know, by Steve and Patty here, as there's going to be a commonality. So, ever concentrating on what we would think, the leaders have to realise that they serve the movement. All members serve the movement. All members have their role, and whether it's as a leader or a follower, they're all vital. So, really, the leader is just another component of the movement. They're not the sum of it. And they have to remember that. And they have to remember they are in service to the movement. They've also very clearly got to be able to subjugate personal likes and dislikes. They've got to be impartial. And the only guide in decision-making, the one and only guide in decision-making, is nothing to do with what they might like or dislike. It's what benefits the movement, which in turn, of course, benefits the folk. So they have to be very self-controlled in that. I mean, actually, you could kind of liken a movement in a way to a spear, you know, where you could have the shaft of the spear is the membership, the general membership, and in our case, the spearhead might be seen as the court of Gothar, and the cutting edges would be the activists and the hummers and hearths and our departments, and the spear point is the steersman. But they're all these parts are vital. I mean, you could have the truest, sharpest blade in the world, but if, you know, if the shaft is warped or weak, then the entire spear is going to be less effective. Or you could have an excellent shaft, but the blade and point are soft, so that would be no good. So, you know, I think I use that analogy to show really leadership is a component, and that's what it is. It's not the sum, and it's a component in the movement. And and that has to be clearly understood. Of course, leaders must have a clear understanding of the OR direction and beliefs. They must realize they are examples and representatives of the right, and while all members are, leadership even more so, they have far more responsibility, and they've also got to be able to be in a position and be prepared to sacrifice a lot of time and effort. And also you have to be able to consider many different angles to any given problem or consideration. But once a decision is made, it has to be remain firm. And then again, of course, they have to be absolutely, you know, loyalty is an absolute requirement. And while all members are expected to be loyal to the right, at the leadership level, it's absolutely demanded. They absolutely have to be. So, I mean, that's the OR. And, you know, I wonder if I could just take a bit of time here to mention someone else who was an exceptional leader, and that was Elsa Christensen, the folk mother. And she exemplified leadership in many ways. She dedicated virtually her entire life to service of the folk. She was still working even into her 90s for Odinism. And she was a very kindly lady, but very resolute. And she generally loved her folk. And, you know, I've met a lot of leaders, really, of different groups, but I have to say she really stands out as remarkable. She was, you know, she was truly inspirational, and I think that's another mark of a good leader, if they're inspirational. But
yep, Dave and I are both nodding our heads in agreement.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it was her who's made, you know, Rudd Mill's booklet widely available again. And this, you know, whether people like the book or not, it is a valuable, you know, it's a part of our heritage of Odinism and Is It True, how it's built. So, I mean, that was amazing. She got that developed. So we continue to distribute that, really, in honour to her and also to Rudd Mills as an early pioneer. So, you know, if you want an example of one kind of a leader, I guess, I mean, Elsa was probably, she was the example.
Certainly. And if there's anybody out there who is not familiar with Elsie, then they should probably start by looking up some information about her to find out more about what we're talking about, because she definitely was so influential. I feel everyone should have a fair knowledge of what she did.
Yeah, she was amazing. I mean, even up to, I mean, she was always inspirational and encouraging, right up to literally the time of her death. I mean, literally. And her last words, which was the day before, last time I saw her, the day before she passed, was for encouragement for the movement. So I think if all those who would be leaders can be even, I don't know, half as effective as she, then things would be in pretty good hands. And I mean, that's another thing. She was also humble with it. I mean, it's a great honour to be able to serve, a great privilege to serve the movement. And that's what it is. It's a privilege, and it should be approached with a certain pride, but also, you know, it's very humbling. That's really all I can say on this.
Right, I don't think that there's much more that needs to be said. That's, again, pointing out somebody in particular like Elsie definitely hits the nail on the head, at least in my concept, too. But the absolute final question I would like to ask, if someone were to be talking to you and ask you specifically, what about the Odinic Rite is the most beneficial thing? What is it that the Odinic Rite has to offer me? What do you think you would point to?
Well, you know, I'd probably say that, you know, when someone asks, what should I do to find happiness, there's an old and I consider very wise answer, which is given by, among others, the Dalai Lama, and that is find ways to work to make others happy, and in that you'll find happiness yourself. So really, you know, that what that's, in relation to this question, the answer is really people should think, well, what benefit, what can I do for the Odinic Rite? Because what you put in is what you'll get out. If you work to elevate your folk or your movement, as being part of that, if they prosper, if they flourish, then, you know, you're going to. You will, because you're part of that. Conversely, if you're just concerned on taking and looking in, you know, egotistically, then you may initially seem to prosper, but as you're going to be of no use to the organism to which you're very literally connected, as that is less aided, then in time it will be detrimental to you. So, really, we've got a large number of areas where they can work, where they can develop their talents. And if they approach it in that direction, then what I think they'll find is that they are part, they've found that, you know, they can be part of a radical answer to a lot of problems. We're working for the betterment of the individual and the Earth itself. We sort of act as a vanguard of the new Odinic awakening. And within that, the movement, they're going to be able to find their potential is highly valued and it's encouraged. And they can work within that community, in that society, to develop that. They're going to basically reach this kind of, as far as possible, you know, a self-actualization, but approached from a different direction in trying to benefit others and their folk. They're obviously benefiting themselves. You know, I think in a lot of ways, a Kipling quote, the strength of the wolf is the pack, and the strength of the pack is the wolf. And that's a kind of quotation that we think applies to us. So I'm hoping that's answered your question.
Oh, absolutely. You're basically pointing out that you only get what you give. You're only going to get, and the Odinic Rite can only do for you as much as you do for the Odinic Rite. And
yeah,
that would go for any national organization.
Well, it's a gift for a gift.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. A gift for a gift. And, you know, they'll find within the OR, you know, it's a circle of unity and honor where they can, they're valued as individuals and they're valued as part of the whole. So they can learn and practice their religion in that kind of environment and actually experience, you know, a spiritual growth as a result from that.
Well, is there anything else you'd like to say in closing?
Well, I think actually, I'd just close by saying, again, I would like to thank you, because this is a wonderful initiative. It really is. And I hope all those who listen have found it of interest and of benefit. Those who might be interested in joining an Odinist movement, which takes a very activist and radical approach, which is a vanguard of the Odinic awakening and practices Odinism in a dynamic way in the modern world. And if they'd like to be a part of that, then, you know, take a look at the Odinic Rite. We'd be quite interested to hear from them and see if they could fit in with us. So, finally, yep, I'd like to thank all the members of the Odinic Rite. I'll give them my thanks and respect. I'd like to thank also all our friends, known and unknown, and to all comrades, Zeke and Wunyo. Hail the high gods. Hail their folk. Hail the new awakening.
Hail.
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 Thank you so much for joining us. It has been an absolute pleasure.
Absolutely.
It's been a great pleasure here.
So that concludes our interview with Heimgast. We hope that you found the long interview as fulfilling as we did.
We had an excellent time. Could have done it for quite a bit longer.
Absolutely. We can't thank Heimgast enough for giving of his time to have that interview with us. And I'd also like to take a moment to thank everyone who responded so well to our promptings of the last few casts to go out and post and review. We have noticed them, and it makes a huge difference. So thank you very much. Keep it up. We really, really can't do this podcast without your support.
And just a plug for the OR, their website is www.odinic-rite.org. Heimgast himself has a number of videos on YouTube, which I strongly recommend you check out. Heimgast interviews with Agothi.
There are several other things that you can get directly from that parent site at odinicrite.org. So we will put links in the show notes to a few different things, as well as a main email address to get in touch with someone from the Odinic Rite. So check those out if you are interested in giving the Odinic Rite some of your time and effort. But with that, we will say goodbye for this month. We will be back next month with our interview of Valgard Murray from the Alcetru Alliance. Bye!
Bye!